Tim set out along Tree Road with the sun declining red on his right side. He felt hollow, scooped out, and perhaps it was better so, at least for the time being. With his mother blind and no man in the house to bring a living, what future was there for them? Big Ross's fellow woodcutters would help as much as they could, and for as long as they could, but they had their own burdens. His da had always called the home place a freehold, but Tim now saw that no cottage, farm, or bit of land in Tree Village was truly free. Not when the Covenant Man would come again next year, and all the years after that, with his scroll of names. Suddenly Tim hated far-off Gilead, which for him had always seemed, when he thought of it at all, which was seldom, a place of wonders and dreams. If there was no Gilead, there would be no taxes. Then they would be truly free. He saw a cloud of dust rising in the south. The lowering sun turned it into a bloody mist. He knew it was the women who had been at the cottage. They were bound in their wagons and traps for the burying parlor Tim had just left. There they would wash the body that had already been washed by the stream into which it had been cast. They would anoint it with oils. They would put birch bark inscribed with the names of his wife and son in the dead man's right hand. They would put the blue spot on his forehead and place him in his coffin. This Hot Stokes would nail shut with short blows of his hammer, each blow terrible in its finality. The women would offer Tim their condolences with the best will in the world, but Tim didn't want them, didn't know if he could bear them without breaking down once again. He was so tired of crying. With that in mind, he left the road and walked overland to the little chuckling rivulet known as State Brook, which would, in short order, bring him to its source point, the clear spring between the Ross cottage and barn. He trudged in a half-dream, thinking first of the Covenant Man, then of the key that would work only once, then of the pookie, then of his mother's hands reaching toward the sound of his voice. Tim was so preoccupied that he almost passed the object jutting from the path that followed the course of the stream. It was a steel rod with a white tip that looked like ivory. He hunkered, staring at it with wide eyes. He remembered asking the Covenant Man if it was a magic wand and heard the enigmatic reply, "It started life as the gear shift of a Dodge Dart." It had been jammed to half its length in the hard pan, something that must have taken great strength. Tim reached for it, hesitated, then told himself not to be a fool. It was no pookie that would paralyze him with its bite and then eat him alive. He pulled it free and examined it closely. Steel it was, fine forged steel of the sort only the old ones had known how to make. Very valuable, for sure, but was it really magic? To him it felt like any other metal thing, which was to say, cold and dead. "In the proper hand," the Covenant Man whispered, "any object can be magic." Tim spied a frog hopping along a rotted birch on the far side of the stream. He pointed the ivory tip at it and said the only magic word he knew, "Abacadabra." He half expected the frog to fall over dead or change into, well, something. It didn't die, and it didn't change. What it did was hop off the log and disappear into the high green grass at the edge of the brook. Yet this had been left for him. He was sure of it. The Covenant Man had somehow known he'd come this way. And when? Tim turned south again and saw a flash of red light. It came from between their cottage and the barn. For a moment, Tim only stood looking at that bright scarlet reflection. Then he broke into a run. The Covenant Man had left him the key. The Covenant Man had left him his wand. And beside the spring where they drew their water, he had left his silver basin, the one he used in order to see. Only it wasn't the basin, just a battered tin pail. Tim's shoulders slumped, and he started for the barn, thinking he would give the mules a good feed before he went in. Then he stopped and turned around. A pail, but not their pail. Theirs was smaller, made of ironwood, and equipped with a glossy handle. Tim returned to the spring and picked it up. He tapped the ivory knob of the Covenant Man's wand against the side. The pail gave back a deep and ringing note that made Tim leap back a step. No piece of tin had ever produced such a resonant sound. Now that he thought of it, no old tin pail could reflect the declining sun as perfectly as this one had, either.
"Did you think I'd give up my silver basin to a half-grown sprat like you, Tim, son of Jack? Why would I, when any object can be magic? And speaking of magic, haven't I given you my very own wand?"
Tim understood that this was but his imagination making the Covenant Man's voice, but he believed the man in the black cloak would have said much the same if he had been there. Then another voice spoke in his head. "He's made of lies from boots to crown, and his gospels bring nothing but tears." This voice he pushed away and stooped to fill the pail that had been left for him. When it was full, doubt set in again. He tried to remember if the Covenant Man had made any particular series of passes over the water. Weren't mystic passes part of magic? And couldn't. All Tim could remember was the man in black telling him that if he disturbed the water, he would see nothing. Doubtful, not so much of the magic wand as of his ability to use it, Tim waved the rod aimlessly back and forth above the water. For a moment there was nothing. He was about to give up when a mist clouded the surface, blotting out his reflection. It cleared, and he saw the Covenant Man looking up at him. It was dark wherever the Covenant Man was, but a strange green light, no bigger than a thumbnail, hovered over his head. It rose higher, and by its light, Tim saw a board nailed to the trunk of an ironwood tree. Ross Kells had been painted on it. The bit of green light spiraled up until it was just below the surface of the water in the pail, and Tim gasped. There was a person embedded in that green light, a tiny green woman with transparent wings on her back.
"It's a Sig, one of the fairy folk."
Seemingly satisfied that she had his attention, the Sig spun away, lighted briefly on the Covenant Man's shoulder, then seemed to leap from it. Now she hovered between two posts holding up a crossbar. From this there hung another sign, and, as was the case with the lettering on the sign marking out the Ross Kells stake, Tim recognized his father's careful printing. "Ironwood Trail ends here," the sign read. "Beyond lies Fagonard," and below this, in larger, darker letters, "Traveler, beware." The Sig darted back to the Covenant Man, made two airy circles around him that seemed to leave spectral, fading trails of green glow behind, then rose and hovered demurely beside his cheek. The Covenant Man looked directly at Tim, a figure that shimmered, as Tim's own father had when Tim beheld the course in the water, and yet was perfectly real, perfectly there. He raised one hand in a semicircle above his head, scissoring the first two fingers as he did so. This was sign language Tim knew well, for everyone in Tree used it from time to time. "Make haste, make haste." The Covenant Man and his fairy consort faded to nothing, leaving Tim staring at his own wide-eyed face. He passed the wand over the pail again, barely noticing that the steel rod was now vibrating in his fist. The thin call of mist reappeared, seeming to rise from nowhere. It swirled and disappeared. Now Tim saw a tall house with many gables and many chimneys. It stood in a clearing surrounded by ironwoods of such great girth and height that they made the ones along the trail look small. Surely, Tim thought, their tops must pierce the very clouds. He understood this was deep in the endless forest, deeper than even the bravest axeman of Tree had ever gone, and by far. The many windows of the house were decorated with cabalistic designs, and from these Tim knew he was looking at the home of Merlin Eld, where time stood still, or perhaps even ran backward. A small, wavering Tim appeared in the pail. He approached the door and knocked. It was opened. Out came a smiling old man whose white, waist-length beard sparkled with gems. Upon his head was a conical cap as yellow as the full earth sun. Water Tim spoke earnestly to Water Merlin. Water Merlin bowed and went back inside his house, which seemed to be constantly changing shape, although that might have been the water. The mage returned, now holding a black cloth that looked like silk. He lifted it to his eyes, demonstrating its use, a blindfold. He handed it toward Water Tim, but before that other Tim could take it, the mystery appeared. When it cleared, Tim saw nothing but his own face and a bird passing overhead, no doubt wanting to get home to its nest before sunset. Tim passed the rod across the top of the pail a third time, now aware of the steel rod's thrumming in spite of his fascination. When the mist cleared, he saw Water Tim sitting at Water Nell's bedside. The blindfold was over his mother's eyes. Water Tim removed it, and an expression of unbelieving joy lit Water Nell's face. She clasped him to her, laughing. Water Tim was laughing too. The mist overspread this vision as it had the other two, but the vibration in the steel rod ceased. Useless as dirt, Tim thought, and it was true. When the mist melted away, the water in the tin pail showed him nothing more miraculous than the dying light in the sky. He passed the Covenant Man's wand over the water several more times, but nothing happened. That was all right. He knew what he had to do. Tim got to his feet, looked toward the house, and saw no one. The men who had volunteered to stand watch would be here soon, though. He would have to move fast. In the barn, he asked Bitsy if she would like to go for another evening ride.